All right, what a treat today. As we get ready for Eagles-Cowboys on Sunday, he, of course, is married to one of our women from the Delaware Valley.
Smart move.
He was a great player. We hated him, and we love him as a broadcaster. He, of course, is Moose. What do you say, Moose Johnson? What's happening, brother?
Oh, is he there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how are you, Darryl?
I'm good. Good morning.
Always great to talk to you, brother. How's your wife?
Great. A little busy getting ready for Christmas, but all good.
All right. You know, we always have to ask about her because, you know, she's one of ours.
I had to convert her. Her ways, she'd gone astray for a while. So, got her back.
So where do you think the Cowboys are right now? Do you think they fixed, obviously defensively they're playing lights out football, but what do you think their offense is, right? I'm curious what you think about their offense now.
Well, I think from where they were early in the year, they've come a long way. And there was there's been a couple of big changes. I think the biggest one is not Amari Cooper, but I think it's actually the switch from Paul Alexander to Mark Colombo as offensive line coach. You know, I think the guys are back to playing the type of technique that they had played for a number of years. I think that Paul came in and he was trying to teach something that was new and different, not wrong, but just new and different. And he'd had success with that for over two decades in the NFL. But, you know, our line had learned a different technique. I think that they were uncomfortable with it a little bit. I don't think that was successful. And when the guys don't buy into something, you just don't have the results. So I think the change there has been huge because it's allowed them to get back to the style of play that they want to play. They want to hand the ball to Ezekiel. They want him to control the game with the offensive line. And then Dak Prescott plays off of that. Now the addition there for Dak obviously has been Amari Cooper, but not so much what Amari does now is the number one, but I think it's allowed everybody else in that wide receiver group to find their defined role in the offense. I think in the beginning of the year without a true number one, everybody was kind of trying to figure out what their role is. What do I do? Where's my bar here? And Amari, as the true number one, has allowed Michael Gallup to step into the number two. It's allowed Cole Beasley to go back and work the slot. And all the other guys. All the other guys, they look and play a lot more comfortable than they did early in the year.
Yeah, the roles are. How do you attack, if you're the Eagles' defense, to me, don't you have to pressure Dak? I mean, if there's one thing that can get to Dak, and we saw the Saints. I mean, the Saints sacked him seven times, and it wasn't all the offensive line's fault. If you're going to try to stop their offense, don't you have to bring pressure and pressure him?
Well, see, as an offensive guy, we loved when you brought pressure. You know, we're going to block it up, and we've got one-on-one now somewhere on the outside. Now, we had Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin. You know, that's a unique combination. We had Troy Aikman and Jay Novacek. You know, we had some matchups that we felt really, really good in. So if you brought pressure, you were really rolling the dice because we were very confident in picking it up. Now, Jim Johnson challenged us as much as anybody. I still have so much respect for him. He was a great defensive coordinator. You know, it took us a while during the course of the game to adjust to what Jim was doing. So he was the one guy that could definitely impact us with pressure. The big thing here with Dak is he's got the ability to move. I think even in his stage of development right now, I think the more disguise you can do on the back end, and I know it's been tough on Philly with all the changing places and faces in the back end with the injuries. But if your group is to the point where they can kind of disguise and move and do different things and give him looks that he thinks he sees pre-snap, but it's something completely different at post-snap, you know, that's the best thing. You know, he's been in the league for a while, but he's still growing and developing. So I think that would probably work better than just the pressure component against Dak.
Darryl, you played, and we're talking with Darryl Johnson on the Comcast Business Hotline. You played 10 years in the NFL for the Cowboys, and you were a part of the heyday. A lot of success there. And one of your former teammates, you just alluded to him, Troy Aikman, prior to the Eagle game back on November 11th, had some very strong criticism for the organization and the franchise moving forward, and that things needed to be changed top to bottom and right at the top with the owner. Since then, the Cowboys have gone on a four-game winning streak, have been very impressive, a couple of really impressive wins in there, including over the Eagles, Atlanta, and obviously the Saints. How did that reverberate through that locker room down in Dallas, and was that a catalyst to them getting things together a little bit here for this four games that they've won?
Well, I think that was something that mainly stayed on the outside. I don't think that had any impact on what was happening inside. You know, I know the media gets frustrated with Jason Garrett down here because he's just steady in everything he does. He talks about the process. But you hear all the coaches in the NFL talk about the process, what you have to go through to earn a victory every Sunday in the NFL. And I've never seen the city of Dallas as low as it was the Tuesday after the Tennessee Titan game when they slipped to 3-5. You know, I've never seen it as excited as it was the night after they beat the Saints. So, you know, what Jason has done, he's kept his team off that emotional roller coaster. You know, they're a steady group of guys led by a steady staff of coaches. And you just keep off that emotional roller coaster. You don't take the lows of the Tennessee loss. You don't take the highs of the New Orleans win. You've got to be the same every single day. And it's a week-to-week job here in the NFL. So, as you pointed out, though, it's been an amazing run. You know, starting with the win in Philadelphia, you know, 4 games ago. I thought the victory in Atlanta, where they were embarrassed last year, was another huge thing. And now your confidence just continues to grow from week to week to week. If they don't beat Philadelphia, if they don't beat Atlanta, and if they don't come back and beat Washington on Thanksgiving Day, I don't think they have a shot at New Orleans, because they're just not going to have the confidence in themselves to be able to pull that game off. But the 3 victories prior to that, you know, I knew the defense was going to be good. I knew they could play to a high level, but I didn't think that they were capable of the style of game that they played against New Orleans. I saw New Orleans in the beginning of the year twice, and they were good then. They were a machine coming into Dallas, and that was an outstanding performance by the Cowboy defense.
Yeah, I'm curious of your impressions on the Eagles offense and what you've seen, because you did a lot of, you saw a lot of Golden Tate, and they had some initial trouble kind of getting him involved in the offense. And Sunday or Monday night was the first time he actually was a little bit involved. And curious to see what you think the Eagles offense needs to do.
Yeah, I know that as we got close to the trade deadline, you know, Will McClay, who's the guy that puts the roster together down here in Dallas, I knew one of his biggest fears was Philadelphia was going to add a wide receiver right at the deadline. And not only did they add a wide receiver, but they added a pretty talented one. So now when you've got, you know, Alshon Jeffrey and you've got Nelson Aguilar, and now you've got Golden Tate to go along with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, you can roll out a pretty impressive skill group. So I know that was a concern of them. It takes a while, right? It takes a while for the quarterback and the wide receiver to develop that chemistry. And that's why I think you didn't see the production that you had previous to that game on Sunday, but it looks like everything is in sync right now. You know, some people talk about, you know, Carson Wentz not being as aggressive as he was last season running the football. And I think that's probably something that Doug has worked with him on, about being smart, the risk and return. And I think you're just a little bit more mature after a serious knee injury. So, but we had him that first came back. And I mean, inside the pocket, he's as good as he ever was. You know, maybe he's not, you know, extending things down the field, and he's a little bit smarter down the field. But I don't see any difference when he's in the pocket. I think he's still one of the best at extending plays. And that's the biggest thing. You know, that's not something that Drew Brees is going to do. That's more of a timing based offense. Yeah, it's very precise in what they do. I think where Dallas could struggle against Philadelphia is that ability for Carson not to pull the ball down and run, but just to put another 2.5-3 seconds on that clock for them to cover.
That's what happened. Did you get a chance to see Monday night? Because that's what he did Monday night.
Big difference.
Where he was able to extend plays. The one Golden Tate touchdown, the one along the sidelines. Wasn't that a great throw? And the other one on the sidelines where he directs Golden Tate and he drops it in the bucket. And all that came from freelancing and extending the play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I thought the one down the sideline was even more impressive than the one in the end zone. To me, the one in the sideline is really one of the better throws I've seen this year from anybody, because you're running full speed to your left. You're a right-handed quarterback, and the ability to adjust your body and put yourself on a platform where you can put that much touch on the ball and just drop in, like you said, right in the bucket. That to me was one of the better throws I've seen all season from any quarterback in the NFL.
It was like a free throw almost that he dropped to him.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it was like a swish.
It's just
yeah,
the way it came off his hand, it was tremendous. We're talking with Daryl Johnson on the Comcast Business Hotline. Daryl, the history between the Eagles and the Cowboys is well documented. And another Eagle player decided to have some commentary on the Cowboys and their struggles over the past couple of years. So I wanted to play this for you. This is Eagle linebacker Kamu Crozier-Hill talking about the Cowboys.
I mean, look at Dallas' history. They always choke, so we'll go down there and make them choke.
Well, you know, you got to consider the source here. And your day with the Cowboys, there wasn't the choke thing, but since your day has ended with the Cowboys, that has been a little bit of a story. What are your thoughts on a player making those statements before what is an enormous football game where the NFC East lead is on the line coming up this Sunday?
Yeah, there's a couple of cliches out there that I've never really bought into, and bulletin board material is one of those. I mean, if you need an opponent to make a statement to get you motivated to play in a Philadelphia-Dallas game, then you're just not there. You're not into it. I think the history of the rivalry is what really was the impetus for us. I think a lot of people forget, you know, Philadelphia was the last team in the East that we beat, you know, coming back from 1-15. We always had a tremendous amount of respect for the Philadelphia Eagles, especially, you know, our offense, because we had to go up against that defense in the early 90s and with Jim Johnson. So we had a tremendous amount of respect for you guys and knew that we were going to have to be, you know, as good as we possibly could be. I remember celebrating at the Vet after we lost 20-10 because we scored 10 points on your defense. You know, it was that type of day for us. So, you know, I think the history of the rivalry is where you get the emotion. And there were big games. You know, the Philadelphia-Dallas was always a big game. And that's where true rivalries are created. You know, there's always going to be a divisional component. But when you can have a rivalry that exists between those divisional opponents that also has marquee games on them in the playoffs, you know, big stakes, you know, that was the great thing about the Dallas-Philadelphia rival when we played. Not only because it was a divisional opponent, because we played in the playoffs for several years.
Yeah, it's more fun when both of you. Last question for me. Let me ask you about Josh Adams, because you played alongside one of the great running backs of all time in Emmitt Smith. What do you see out of Josh Adams and his game? Because he's become much more omnipresent with the Eagles running the ball in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I just like the fact that you've got a guy who probably wasn't in the plans early in the season, but because of injury is now taking advantage of that opportunity. So I love to see stories like Josh Adams. You know, got to see him a little bit in the preseason, doing some different things. And then when we were getting ready for, you know, the week 3 game against the Colts, you know, he was starting to get some opportunities there because you had some injuries, you know, with the hamstring, situation that went through the running back room. So he was getting a few snaps there, and you could see the potential. And it's just a confidence thing for guys like that. You know, it's a huge leap from the college game to the pro game.
Yeah.
You know, at the college game, sometimes you're just better than other people. They can't stop what you're going to do just because you're better than they are. That doesn't really happen a lot in the NFL. So there's an adjustment period when you get up and you finally realize, wow, I mean, everybody at this level is really, really good. And he seems to have adjusted really quickly. So, you know, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him. There's a great job by the organization doing a good job of you know, drafting and or picking him up, getting him on the roster, and then, you know, getting him some quality reps early in the year. And now when you need him the most, he's ready to go.
Last thing, Moose, just curious, either of these teams, and I know the Cowboys beat the Saints, but in a playoff situation, can either of these teams stay with the Rams and the Saints? Is the game itself, when you look at the prolific offenses, and you can throw the Chiefs in there, we'll see what happens with that Kareem Hunt, and these offensive juggernauts, can you win today by running the ball and playing defense?
Yeah, we saw it against, we saw it with Dallas, New Orleans. You know, we had Arizona, Green Bay last weekend. And, you know, when you find out that there's, you know, that there's some stuff going on behind the scenes in Green Bay that we were aware of, but didn't know how bad it had gotten. But, you know, we expected that to be, you know, kind of an offensive day for the Packers, and the Cardinals play great defense against them. So I thought last week that there was a couple of games that were like that. You know, we've kind of gotten away from what we had the first 8 to 10 weeks, where we had, you know, points and touchdowns and passing yards, and we're setting all kinds of records through 12 weeks in the NFL. It looked like last week the defense finally said enough is enough. And that's why I like, of the three teams you mentioned, I like New Orleans, because I think that sometimes the Rams struggle defensively, even with the great personnel they have. I think if you're a good running team, you can kind of keep them honest there. You can keep Goff and that offense off the field. I think Kansas City is the same way. I think that they struggle sometimes defensively. You can keep Mahomes and that great skill set off the field. But New Orleans has a good defense. And you know, you get into a game like the Thursday night game against Dallas. They only allowed 13 points. You know, there was an opportunity for Dallas to have more. But I'll give their defense a little bit of credit there. So I think that they've got good balance. I think Chicago has good balance, not as explosive offensively as those three teams, but better defensively. So So I've always believed that it's really the balance. And when we were really good back in the 90s, I think a lot of people forget our first Super Bowl with all the high-profile guys on our offensive side of the ball, with the triplets and Troy and Michael and Emmett, we were number six in the NFL in offense. But we had the number one defense. And I think that's – a lot of people find that surprising, that our first Super Bowl, it was actually our defense that was ranked higher than our offense in the NFL. So what we had was a really good balance between the two. And I think that that's the most important thing, because if you're struggling defensively, these coaches and these staffs are so good in the NFL, they're going to find a way to create matchups to take advantage of that and put some points on the board.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Darryl, we appreciate the time today, man. Look forward to the game on Sunday. Another chapter in Eagles-Cowboys. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. With a lot at stake in this one. So this is going to be fun. It's been a long time since we've had some high stakes in this rivalry near the end of the season.
No question about
thanks,
it.
Thanks, brother. You're the best,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, thanks, man. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Take care.
There he is.
Have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Darryl Johnston joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline.
What a gentleman, man.
Great guy.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.